And welcome to Viewpoints, where local news meets a national audience. On this week's show, in Sackville, New Brunswick, EOS Eco Energy, an environmental organization, faces an uncertain future.
It's very difficult for these often small nonprofits who are very efficient with the funds that they get to always be on these annual grant cycles. We need multi-year funding. We need core funding for these organizations.
To Nova Scotia, where pilot project concludes with flying colors, the Your Health Nova Scotia app will be expanded to all Nova Scotians.
We know from our evaluation here, but also from other jurisdictions around the world. This empowers patients. This allows patients to manage their own health, and the impact on providers is also profound. We know folks feel more engaged in their health. They better understand their health, and people can literally bring their app out of their pocket.
An Ontario Citizens Committee urges Kitchener's City Council to declare social isolation and loneliness as an epidemic.
We feel lonelier than ever. And so people in that situation are very prone to radicalization, to extremism. It's not surprising that there's greater incivility right now when we don't really know each other and we dehumanize people.
And we'll stay in central Canada, where the Elora Singers are all smiles as they celebrate the 45th Elora Festival and the $127,000 boost they received from the Trillium Foundation. Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Welcome to all of you. Thanks for being here. My name is Boris Chassaigne. I'll be with you for the next 30 minutes. We start things off out east, where a $15 million pilot project will be expanded to serve all Nova Scotians. The pilot was conducted through a downloadable app called Your Health NS. The Nova Scotia government says it puts medical records in the patient's pockets. The Your Health Nova Scotia app was first shared with 13,000 patients from January to April. The pilot took place at six clinics throughout the province, one of them being the Queen's Family Health in Liverpool. After gathering feedback from the users in the pilot, it was announced early July that anyone over 16 years of age with a valid Nova Scotia health card can now download the app and access its features. Users can now access their own medical records and prescriptions, lab and test results, immunizations, and a history of their primary care visits. Patients can also schedule some appointments through the app. More on this with Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
The Nova Scotia government is expanding access to a smartphone app that lets patients see their own medical records. The government gave early access to more than 13,000 patients in six clinics around the province from January to April to the Your Health NS app. One of those clinics was Queen's Family Health in Liverpool. After gathering feedback from users in the pilot, it announced Wednesday that anyone over 16 with a valid Nova Scotia health card can now download the app and access its features. The biggest draw of the app is the ability for people to access their own medical records, prescriptions, lab and test results, and immunizations. It also allows you to see your hospital, clinic, or other medical appointments. Patients can also schedule some appointments through the app. Michelle Thompson is Nova Scotia's Health and Wellness Minister. She said Wednesday the app helps give Nova Scotians control over their own health care.
We started small with a test and try approach, but the results were huge. Those who used it liked it. It improved their healthcare experience, gave them more control over their care, and most importantly, it put healthcare back in their hands. We want every Nova Scotian to feel that way about their healthcare. Today, we're making that happen. You can now carry your medical history in your pocket wherever you go.
Officials with Nova Scotia Health told reporters at a technical briefing that more than 300,000 Nova Scotians have already downloaded the app. They said that of the pilot project participants, 98% said they would continue to use the app, while 30% said they felt they didn't need to see their primary care provider because they had access to their records. Officials could not say how many people actually used the app. They said that because of privacy concerns, they did not track individual users and how they used it. The information came from a voluntary feedback survey in the app. Dr. Aaron Smith is Medical Executive Director of the Northern Zone and the province's Medical Executive Director.
We know from our evaluation here, but also from other jurisdictions around the world, This empowers patients. This allows patients to manage their own health. And the impact on providers is also profound. We know folks feel more engaged in their health. They better understand their health. It allows a significant number of folks to avoid unnecessary visits to both emergency departments and primary care facilities, and allows physicians to really focus on what they need to do is care of acutely ill people. And people can literally bring their app out of their pocket and show the medications they're on, the lab tests they've had. So it also enhances continuity of care.
The Your Health NS app has cost the government $15 million in total, with $2 million of that spent on the pilot project, with $3 million spent on the rollout to all of Nova Scotia. Officials said Wednesday that protecting people's privacy was one of their primary concerns.
But we are ensuring that people's information is safe and citizens can see their own information. And other than, you know, a few folks who will do audit function to ensure everything is fine, there will be nobody else that can see that information.
During the pilot phase, some participants in Queens County said that they either had no information available or the information they saw changed from day to day. Others said they could see all their records. Scott McKenna is the Chief Information Officer for Nova Scotia Health. He said Wednesday that everybody should be able to see their health records now.
Those are the lessons we've learned from the pilot, how to change that. So now we've matched records a little bit differently, put some new algorithms in place to make sure we're matching records based with a high level of confidence on health card number and date of birth.
Thompson said she's confident that people will see information that's reliable and up to date.
The point of a test and try is that we bring individuals into the pilot. We understand the technology. We understand the interface with the people who are using the technology. And we build on their feedback and their experience. So, you know, we're very grateful to those initial pilot participants. It really gave us the opportunity to understand the app, build the app, get their feedback, see what the experience was and move on from there. And so I feel very confident in the team and their ability to continue to deliver the iterations of this app. And I do believe that the app will be of huge benefit to Nova Scotians.
More records like primary care visits with doctors, nurse practitioners, or through pharmacy clinics will be added over the coming months, Thompson said, with the goal of having that information available by the end of September. I'm Rick Conrad.
You're listening to Viewpoints with Boris Chassang.
We stopped by Ontario, where Dolores Singers held an open rehearsal last week ahead of the opening night of the 45th Elora Festival. The night was also a celebration of the $127,000 grant they got from the Ontario Trillium Foundation. Christina Stelmakovich, a manager of the Elora Festival and Singers, says the festival wouldn't be possible without the support of the province and the dozens of volunteers. The 45th seasons of the festival began July 5th with the opening gala featuring Joseph Haydn's The Creation. Concerts run through to July 20th. Here's Kate Stockman in Fergus, Ontario.
The Elora Festival begins this weekend, and the Elora Singers held an exclusive open rehearsal this week to prepare and celebrate an over $127,000 grant from the Ontario Trillium Foundation. MPP for Wellington Halton Hills, Ted Arnott, explained why that grant was so significant.
Well, I think it's important to point out that the Ontario Trillium Foundation is an organization where volunteers actually make the decisions as to which projects and which community organizations are going to be supported through these grants. And a $127,400 grant is a significant show of support for the work done here at the Elora Festival.
Christina Stelmakovich, manager of the Elora Festival and Singers, says the provincial support is very important to the festival.
It really does take a village. A portion of funds coming from the government, a portion of funds coming from donors, a portion of funds coming from sponsors, and from ticket sales. This is basically how we make it work. There's so much that goes on behind the scenes, and that kind of support, both financially and, dare I say, emotionally, is what make a festival happen.
The Alora Festival is also a big contributor to the local economy, with Stelmakovich pointing out visitors fill up the village's restaurants and bed and breakfasts on the weekend. She also expressed gratitude for the many community members who make the Alora Festival possible.
We have over 100 volunteers who are dedicated to doing some aspect of volunteering for the festival, whether it's ushering, lifting chairs, helping out at events. We have outdoor events, indoor events, people helping out at the office, people volunteering for the book sale. This is an enormous part, a community effort.
Stelmakovich says the first performances feature an array of performers in addition to the Alora Singers.
This weekend, our opening night is Haydn Creation. Then we have the very next day, Lila Bialy, who is a jazz vocalist, who's going to come and do a concert, and the Alora Singers are going to be performing with her.
The 45th season of the Alora Festival begins this weekend. There will be concerts through to July 20th.
I'm Candace Vetter in Embrim, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints. Follow us on X at Frequency News. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
We make another stop in Ontario to learn more about an unusual initiative. Compass Kitchener Citizens Committee, tasked with assessing the city's strategic plan, says the city has an opportunity to lead the nation in addressing a public health issue. It thinks it's time to declare loneliness and isolation as an epidemic. Reporting to the last city council meeting before the summer break, Compass Kitchener says the rise in loneliness and the polarization in society were critical issues. Several councillors noted their concerns and discussed the implications of loneliness for the community. Details with MP Holmes in Kitchener, Ontario.
A citizen committee has urged Kitchener City Council to declare a social isolation and loneliness epidemic. Reporting to the last City Council meeting before the summer break, Compass Kitchener, a citizen committee tasked with assessing the city's strategic plan, emphasized that this is the city's opportunity to lead the nation in addressing this public health issue. Judy Stevens-Wells and Troy Glover, members of the Compass Kitchener Advisory Committee, presented their report and their request to Council.
Compass Kitchener strongly encourages Council to recognize the urgent need for action on the pressing issue of social isolation and loneliness within our community. By declaring social isolation and loneliness an epidemic, the City of Kitchener has the opportunity to lead the nation as the first municipality in Canada to acknowledge and address this critical public health issue. At a time when recognition of this crisis remains lacking at the provincial and national levels, the City of Kitchener can seize this opportunity to set a precedent and inspire other municipalities to follow suit, thereby catalyzing a nationwide movement toward combating loneliness, promoting social cohesion, and creating the conditions for a greater sense of belonging.
Compass Kitchener is a citizen committee whose job it is to assess the city's strategic plan. In addition to addressing social isolation and loneliness, Compass Kitchener's Strategic Plan Evaluation Report for the years 2019 to 2022 examined how the city has done in the past and what it can do to improve and be more community-focused. The 2024 Compass Kitchener Report took an in-depth review of six major projects: the Bike Share Program, including the Neuron Scooters, and the Pedestrian First Streets Initiatives, which were both deemed highly successful. The Civic District Master Plan and Downtown Vision projects both received praise for public engagement and clear principles, though updates are needed for both. The Mill Cortland Community Centre expansion was commended for its inclusive and innovative design process, and whilst some tech-related improvements were suggested for the Customer Experience Review Program, it was otherwise applauded for multiple service improvements. A key discussion point was the Arts and Culture Master Plan. The committee emphasized the importance of having strategies in place to combat post-COVID isolation, which has significantly impacted the sector.
As you've seen in the media, we have huge issues in arts and culture in this community, as well as across the province and across the country. This is not Kitchener-Waterloo alone. But I think people are shocked. The people who work in that sector with the actual impact post-COVID, everyone thought the worst of it was during COVID. It's not. It's with us today.
Compass Kitchener highlighted several other critical issues that need the city's attention, including finding innovative, affordable housing solutions, developing strategies for sustainability and climate change, and increasing financial accountability. But it was the rise in loneliness that concerned several of the councillors. Mayor Barry Verbanovich asked if the increasing polarization in society may contribute to these loneliness numbers.
The growing polarization in society, that there isn't a lot of gray anymore. Everything is coming in right or wrong, black or white. No desire to talk and try to find a happy middle ground anymore. And I'm wondering if the committee reflected on that at all.
Well, I will say that there absolutely is a correlation between the two. That it's not surprising in an age when we've never been lonelier as a species, that people, which is ironic, by the way, that we live in a time where we can connect easier than ever before in humanity, that we feel lonelier than ever. But it's not surprising that when people feel lonely, they seek out any sort of connection that they can make, because we know that as human beings, we are hardwired to connect with other people. And so people in that situation are very prone to radicalization, to extremism. It's not surprising that there's greater incivility right now when we don't really know each other and we dehumanize people. It's harder to dehumanize them when you see people and interact with them. So the more that we can do to engage those individuals, I think, the better it is for our community.
Overall, Compass Kitchener was happy with the City of Kitchener's progress on the strategic plan and also commended the city's new policy framework for hybrid work and improvements in public engagement and customer service. I'm MP Holmes. Thanks for listening.
Comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
And we close the show in New Brunswick, where EOS Eco Energy, which monitors water quality, is facing an uncertain future. EOS has been keeping tabs on the region's brooks and streams with funding from the New Brunswick Environmental Trust Fund. However, the fund is set to run out of money in 2027. This because of changes to the province's beverage container program. Everything is connected to water, and we are as well, says Brittany Cormier, executive director of EOS Eco Energy. Here she is speaking with Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick.
Every summer since 2019, EOS Eco Energy sends people out into the brooks and streams of the region's watersheds to observe and record conditions. Because there's several watersheds inside EOS territory, those water quality monitoring teams have been working on a rotating basis around the region.
We did Cape Tormentine 1 year, 12 sites. The Tanchmere River watershed 1 year, 12 sites. And the Dorchester Rockport area we've done twice now, 12 sites there. So this worked really well. It helped us get a bit more of a snapshot of the water quality monitoring in local streams and rivers. We get to observe wildlife, aquatic ecology, levels of algae, plant growth, eutrophication.
That's Brittany Cormier, the new executive director of EOS Eco Energy. Rotating monitoring between different watersheds has one key challenge. The group had no baseline established for the watersheds they were monitoring. So they spoke to the Department of Environment and Local Government, which funds watershed monitoring in the province through its Environmental Trust Fund.
We asked what really determines like a baseline. So what determines how much we know and like where it gets enough that we know what's changing and how quickly and where the impacts might be and where we can focus our efforts on restoration of something of the sort. But it takes about 10 years
Just to establish a baseline.
About that. but then other groups in New Brunswick have been monitoring water quality monitoring for 25 years plus. And so we just made the decision this year to go forward with an annual water quality monitoring plan, not a rotational. We chose 12 sites across those three areas, and we're going to commit to those, maybe build our capacity. Some of the other groups have more than 20 sites that they're able to monitor, but this all depends on, you know, how many staff we have available, how much funding we have year by year, and the test from RPC, how much we can afford. So we're really looking forward to going on an annual basis now and to really establishing a little bit more.
Cormier says there's a possibility that the new annual EOS program could expand in future, but for now she's excited to start collecting annual data and working towards establishing a baseline for the region's watersheds.
So the sites that we chose in this 12-site monitoring regime, we've taken that into consideration, like where we might see other groups monitoring some sites, like with a different regime. Like Ducks Unlimited is monitoring certain areas of our region too, and Fort Folly Habitat Recovery is looking at different sites in our region as well. So it's a complementary system. We're also hoping to build capacity so we don't really have to sacrifice a whole lot, but this makes sense for this year to be able to do it and do it properly, and then we'll go from there, and hopefully we'll be able to build into maybe a 21-site regime or something of the sort that's done elsewhere in the province. And the data that we're going to be getting, the observational data, the data from the lab, the data from our YSI Professional Plus, which is a really fancy piece of equipment that we're going to bring as well. It's going to be a really good first year to build off of what we've already done.
Cormier has worked in the nonprofit environmental sector since she graduated from Mount Allison, and even as a student, worked on water quality projects. She's passionate about it.
Water quality monitoring is very important province-wide. Without it, we don't know what's happening in our local streams, our watersheds, rivers, so forth. Everything is connected to water, and we are as well.
In order to be able to do their water quality monitoring work every year, EOS needs to piece together funding every year. The province's Environmental Trust Fund has been a reliable source for water quality monitoring work and a number of other projects that EOS undertakes. But EOS must apply every year, along with dozens of other groups, and there's no guarantee. Now there's increased uncertainty because the revenue source for the Environmental Trust Fund is gone. This year, the province changed its beverage container program to give consumers their full deposit back when they return refundable containers. Before April 1st, part of that deposit went to the Environmental Trust Fund, which is how it grew to have an accumulated surplus of almost $41 million in 2022, according to a critical Auditor General's report that year. That surplus is what's behind a government projection that the fund will be able to continue without new revenue until 2027. A spokesperson told CHMA by email that the Department of Environment and Local Government is confident that there are sufficient funds to continue investing in environmental priorities until a permanent funding solution is established. EOS Eco-Energy and at least two dozen other watershed monitoring groups around the province that received funding through the ETF this year are counting on it.
We need to continue to have the Environmental Trust Fund.
That's Memram Cook Tanchamar MLA Megan Mitten.
I think what would be ideal would be for consultations to happen with the environmental nonprofits and have a discussion about what stable long-term funding would look like, what kind of programs would make sense, and to not just have it be in general revenue. I asked in question period to former Minister of Environment, Gary Crossman, where is this money going to come from? And he just said, oh, well, we've got a few years. We don't know yet. And that's just not a good answer. That's not good enough. I think that figuring out just it being just a line item, it doesn't necessarily have to come from bottle returns. It could just be a line item that's guaranteed. I think there was a bit of stability with that
because I don't think there's a lot of trust that some government might come in and just cut things. And so relying on the bottle returns was more stable than the political whims of certain politicians, unfortunately. Now that's not the case.
Mitten says when it comes to certain programs like watershed monitoring, the funding should be more stable.
It's very difficult for these often small nonprofits who are very efficient with the funds that they get to always be on these annual grant cycles. We need multi-year funding. We need core funding for these organizations. This should be more permanent, some of that funding, and then have some projects that that people can apply for, more of one-off things. We know we need watershed monitoring. That should happen every year. So I don't see why the funding should ever be cut for that.
Brittany Cormier is an optimist and so is hoping that the end of new revenue for the ETF will mean possible changes for the better in how groups like EOS are funded.
Definitely, if it was more of a multi-year funding, that would take away some barriers and also give us a little bit of security to know that we can continue these projects. There are different models to look at for this too. The watershed monitoring, for example, PEI has a watershed management funding to give each watershed group, I think they have 24 in the province, an annual source of funding that they don't need to reapply for. And then for different projects that they need more funding to accomplish, such as restoration, sometimes that could be a very large budget. They can apply for that separately. So that would be a fantastic model to look at. Moving forward, I think there are a lot of different ways that this could be beneficial. And I'm banking on that, and I have rose-colored glasses, and I hope that this is going to be a turn for the better.
That's Brittany Cormier, Executive Director of EOS Eco Energy, and one of two dozen groups to get funded by the New Brunswick Environmental Trust Fund this year to do basic water quality monitoring in the province's rivers and streams.
And how time flies, that's it for us at Viewpoints. Thanks to Rick Conrad, Kate Stockman, MP Holmes, and Erica Butler. Thanks to our national editors, Maureen McEwen and Victoria Fenner. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and your local radio station. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. Thanks for keeping us company this week, and until the next, remember to have fun. Ciao.
Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.